know, I can really appreciate the kind of work that must have involved to make those kinds of presentations, because I mean that's how collaborations work, is when you go to people where the plan isn't already sewn up,
right,
so that they can have some ownership.
They can have some ownership, and that was, and we had people from the community that were involved, Kalima Smith, she was there at the PAC meeting, Willard Perry, who was a very strong community leader in Northeast Central Durham, and who passed several years ago, Dorothy Kelly, who was another community leader there, and I'm thinking they were basically the three most critical leaders within the community that really put in a lot of time and effort to sit together, planning and discussing and making certain that it's team. When we came before the community, you had the city government representative, the police representative, the community representative, but we all represented one voice, and we were all there as a team moving in the same direction. So the people from the community saw that unity, they saw that trust.
That's great.
And they saw that, you know, that everyone was committed to the community, and there were no hidden agendas.
Yeah.
And as we indicated at one time, that Carl and I were criticized as actually stepping outside of the realm of city government and policing in bringing about this type of collaboration, and that wasn't our job to do that. And we both agreed, no, it's not our job, but nobody's doing it. So, so we had to make it our job to bring about that type of collaboration from the community, from all the service providers, and bring everyone's team. And we're saying, who better to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have anything to gain other than creating better communities. Certainly, we can't benefit financially.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have any other agendas.
Right.
So, and by doing that, a lot of folks saw that, you know, that is true, and that, if you're committed, if you're going to commit to doing it, we'll commit to working with you to make it happen.
Right, yeah.
And then again, we had the support of Mayor Kirchhoff when she came to the table, and she adopted the Northeast Central Durham Partners Against Crime as her initiative. And that, so anyone who opposed, that initiative opposed her.
Was that sort of a strategy on her part to try to make sure it would be adopted and supported?
Well, yeah, because we were meeting a lot of opposition because there were a lot of different agencies that...
Where was that opposition coming from? Or, you know, or at least generally, even if you can't say specifically?
I think one of it was had to do with tradition.
Yeah.
That a lot of folks just were not accustomed to operating like this. A lot of them resisted change, which because this meant change, and we had to get the same support from city manager because we had department heads that were resisting because of the empowerment aspect. And you don't have total control. You can't get behind the closed doors and walls of City Hall and make all these decisions. Now you got to bring them out to the community, and the community has got to support it, or otherwise it's not going to happen. So, I mean, you had a lot of resistance, you know, not just from outside of city government, but within city government.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, this is a new way of doing business, and I'm settled in to the way we've been doing it for years. It's almost on automatic pilot. We don't really have to have to make a, you know, tweak something here and there every now and then. But otherwise, it's good. Now we've got to, you're disrupting everything. We got to go back and make all these changes. And right now, we don't know really what's going to happen. So, but by having that support from the top, and not only the support, the understanding of exactly how this thing is supposed to work. We're not saying, oh yeah, we'll support you. Go ahead. They knew exactly how it was supposed to work, and they knew exactly what their roles were.
That's great.
And so that really made a difference. Yeah. You know, when you've got CEOs across the board stepping up and say, yes, we commit, and we did to do a lot of training.
Yeah.
We had to train them as far as the philosophy was concerned, and we had to train them as far as how to be more effective in a team atmosphere and things like that. So we did a lot of that initially to get people on board and understanding of how things needed to operate and what needed to happen and how And I think that's something really we need to revisit now, mm-hmm, because it's mm-hmm. been so long since that we really came in real hard and strong
right.
with all of these, you know, the different training programs and orientating and getting support. And all of a sudden, the leadership have changed in a lot of these organizations, and people really don't still remember or were even a part of what happened back 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, because we're talking like
92 and 93 when we were doing that.
And were these CEOs from like area businesses or RTP, or, you know, when you're talking, are you talking about people that you're trying to bring to the table from the corporate world as well?
Yeah, we brought folks from the corporate world, some, you know, that and a lot of those basically more so for resources than anything else. Some of the folk who were just only regular service providers to the communities are the ones that we really tried to bring together for the partnership itself. Again, the churches, the local area, YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, the schools, individual schools within the communities, the neighborhood organizations, the universities and the community colleges and different things, the United Way.
So these were all part of like the 50 different agencies.
That we brought together. And then, you know, we would bring different ones together from outside of the community. A good example being the Kingdom Foundation that we brought to the table and made a presentation at North Carolina Central University. We had community there. Mm-hmm. We had some of the other partners there. And Frank Keenan himself was there, as well as William Friday. And we basically presented the Northeast Central Durham model. And one of the things that happened that was really tremendous, and we really had no idea that you know, we would get this kind of commitment and support. Mm-hmm. But Frank Keenan himself stood up at that meeting. He spoke and he talked about how impressed he was with the model and the involvement of the community, the empowerment aspect of that, and that he was going to support this initiative.
Great.
And they went back and they created what is known now as the Durham Scholars Program. With, I think, $3.6 million.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, that was the amount that they committed. And he indicated that day that he felt that education was key and critical to a community like Northeast Central Durham. And he felt that with looking at the high dropout rate and the percentage of folk over the age of 25 who had not completed high school, that number would not be repeated if kids felt that when they graduated from high school, the resources would be there to allow them to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to ensure that those resources would be there, and that a kid in Northeast Central Durham who graduated from high school and who applied to a college or university in the city of Durham and was accepted could go free.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that money aside through the University of North Carolina to kind of oversee, to come in and identify and target youth in middle school, work with them right on through high school, right into the university.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the type of commitment that some of the types of commitments that we receive for Northeast Central Durham. And again, and I think that the reason that we receive that commitment is because of the way the actual initiative was designed, with the community being the driving force.
Yeah, which is how in some ways sustained change, I think, anyway, happens, because if it's from the outside, then the outside comes and goes. You know?
And it is can only be sustained as long as the outside remains on the inside.
Yeah.
As soon as they move back out, it actually goes down because the community, if not a part of it, if they don't have ownership mm-hmm. of it, they're not going to support it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to sustain it and make it continue to work. And that's what we've done mm-hmm. in Maine, because we explained that we can't always be there.
Mm-hmm.
We can provide maintenance, but you are going to have to sustain,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, all of these different initiatives and, mm-hmm. and the stability of that community mm-hmm. is going to be in your hands. And that's why I'm saying, you know, in long term, especially, how cost effective
mm-hmm.
what we are doing
yeah.
is going to be, because, I mean, you're not going to have to continue to put resource after resource
right.
into the same hole.
Right.
You know, and once you put it there, it's going to kind of work it to stabilize and cover it, so that hole doesn't exist anymore, and you
right.
can move on and deal with other issues. And other problems and concerns.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it seemed like going back and sort of looking at the history of the area and realizing how in times previously a lot of the tobacco money had found its way, supported a lot of the infrastructure stuff. And then it seems like
mm-hmm.
somewhere along the line that support kind of
mm-hmm.
seemed to dry up, or, you know, I don't know what the story was, maybe with the mill closing and the mm-hmm. loss of resources there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But seems like without that, as you're saying, without that outside support, you know,
mm-hmm.
how do you build that
yeah.
infrastructure?
And it's again, it requires doing some of the things that we've done. It's going out and getting that outside support to support things
yeah.
that are going on the inside. And just creating more opportunities.
Yeah.
And sometimes those opportunities may be necessary right within that community, but there's an opportunity for folk who live in these communities to be able to actually rise above a certain level to be able to provide for their families
mm-hmm.
and for themselves, and to reclaim some of the pride
mm-hmm.
that goes along with, you know, making these neighborhood better.
Yeah.
Bringing in again initiatives. We created, like, for instance, the Reinvestment Center
huh.
in Northeast Central Durham. That's out of Holloway Street School.
Huh.
Again, an opportunity for people to, right within their community, come to a location where they can identify what kind of resources are available to
mm-hmm.
me. And then actually be allowed to go from that location or be transported from that location out to wherever they need
uh-huh.
to be brought back into
uh-huh.
the community. So, you know, what we are looking at with this model was to actually bring resources within the community, governmental resources. We got a commitment from city and county government to come together to create that reinvestment center.
Huh.
And the county actually funded
huh.
a full-time position
huh.
for that particular site.
Uh-huh.
And we purchased two vans
huh.
with volunteer drivers
huh.
to actually transport residents from
huh.
that, from Northeast Central
huh.
Durham back and forth to different locations
mm-hmm.
to actually make so they could access
mm-hmm.
different services that's
mm-hmm.
provided by city and county government.
Mm. Wow, great. So that people could actually get those needs met that
right.
they might not otherwise
right.
have been able to meet.
So
yeah.
there's a place you come back first of all, sit down
yeah.
and talk to someone who understands your situation
yeah.
and your position
yeah.
and be able to say, you know, to look at your situation
yeah.
and recommend
yeah.
and familiarize you with what's available.
Yeah.
And
it's almost like putting Northeast Central Durham back on the map in Durham,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of people being able to be heard,
right.
you know. That seems pretty critical.
Mm-hmm.
So now, how would you say that the Latino story has fit into this? I mean, you know, during the early 90s, there would have been a growing population. How have you seen
I think initially, with that population, it was growing all the time, but it was almost like we didn't recognize
uh-huh.
it.
Yeah.
You know, you saw it, but it just didn't really register
yeah.
what was going on. And it was not until I would think probably in 95, 96
uh-huh.
that we really realized that,
uh-huh.
Man, we've got a real strong Latino population here
uh-huh.
and we need to really start to look at, you know,
uh-huh.
providing how we are providing services, especially with some of the things that we talked about earlier with the crime and
uh-huh.
the different things that were going on within the community. And again, I think that kind of goes back to where we had actually started with Northeast Central Durham in 92 and things like that we had found that we had developed a process that could take us really from a devastated stage of existence to really a more viable stage. And we had done that with those residents and those areas of Northeast Central Durham where we were working. Now we had to go back and do the same thing again.
Wow.
But this time we had to actually begin working again involving the Hispanic community. Mm-hmm. But see, the only thing about that process is that that process must continue to actually go over and over again. You never stop. You have to go back again to organizing the community, reestablishing priorities and needs, reestablishing partnerships. I mean, and once you get to, you think you've done everything that you can possibly imagine that you can do, you have to start over again. So, and that was one of the things that you know we had to kind of come to the realization of is that when we got to the end, we said, "Well, are we at the end?" And then things start to fall through the cracks again.
Yeah.
And then it actually came to us, well, we have to start over again. So what we had to do then is go back and start again, but this time involve again the Latino community, which means with some of the barriers, we had to go outside and get identify people outside the community to come in to serve as liaisons, support organizations, people that trust the Hispanic Center was one. We had to go across the street over here to the Immaculate Conception Church here and meet with the father there to get his support as far as bringing that groups together and just start to work again within the community to build some trust because if you don't have the trust and communication, trust, and understanding, those are three things that you know that we've identified that you must have, and one kind of leads to the other.
Uh-huh.
You know, good, strong communication, positive communication leads to your understanding.
Uh-huh.
Your understanding leads to your trust.
Uh-huh.
So we had to actually start from scratch and working, and we've been able to do that. I mean, we were able to do a lot of things in the communities. The officers and began to spend more time out. We've started to do a lot of crime prevention programs and community policing programs in the communities, festivals and different things like that, just positive interactions. It worked. I mean, if you look at how we went from the dealing with the crimes being perpetrated against the Latino community, and from the lack of assistance and cooperation to ultimately going to court and having them come to court and testify against and giving information and identifying actually suspects and things like that. It wasn't easy, but we were able to do these things because we actually went back through that process of developing trust with the community. And now the thing of it is to keep them involved and to recognize that it's one community. You don't have a black community and a Latino community. You have one. And we went into this with Northeast Central Durham. One of the walls we had to tear down was the wall that separated public housing residents from non-public housing residents. We tore those down. So, you know, it's one community. It was a public housing community here, a non-public housing community here. It's just, these are communities, and we don't label. So once we began to take away those labels, this is a Hispanic community, this is a black community, this is a public housing community, and bringing people together, because the more you began to label people and put these labels up, more people began to identify with these labels. So we say we need to tear down the label, get rid of the labels, tear down the wall, bring the total community together to work as a community, hand in hand. And the same thing we've had to do with the Latino, residents in the communities that, you're part of this community.
Yeah, which is in some ways sounds like it's trying to find points of connection and move away from the points of difference de-emphasize those. Yeah,
that's true.
Because it's interesting, as I've talked with different people, you know, some people have talked about, some of the African Americans have been concerned about, job loss potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's issues like that that seem to polarize people a little bit. Other people have talked about simply differences in cultures, yeah. and so it's hard to connect across those. Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the strategies for how to, as you say, bring these communities together into one community?
Yeah. Again, I think it goes back to just being able to come to the table and talk mm-hmm. and air your differences and your concerns and things like that. And because once you do that, once you are able to do that and not fear mm-hmm. that it's going to be taken the wrong way or that, you know, again, once you recognize that you are one and you're trying to find out what the concerns are, that you are able to come to the realization that they're not really problems at all.
Mm-hmm.
They may be perceptual
yeah.
kind of things that,
yeah.
you know, once you begin to understand what's going
yeah.
on, you realize, okay, I didn't
yeah.
I didn't see it like that initially.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we have worked, towards making happen.
Yeah.
It's just being able to look at that. And plenty of employment opportunities,
right.
you know, out there.
Right.
And one of the things that we're finding is that the Latino community brings a strong work ethic
yeah.
to the community. I mean,
yeah.
and they're going to be very aggressive
yeah.
as relates to going out and getting jobs.
Yeah.
And these are not jobs necessarily taken from anybody else. The jobs
right.
nobody else have not taken the time to go out and get.
Right.
You know, so... So, you know, you have to kind of look at it
mm-hmm.
the way that it actually is. And
mm-hmm.
And if we've shown that, again, there are plenty of employment opportunities there. We've brought different businesses and organizations
mm-hmm.
to the table
mm-hmm.
that even on a given Saturday morning, we've been able to put 20, 30 people to work.
Mm-hmm.
Not just going out and doing minimum wage jobs,
mm-hmm.
but actually jobs that they can go to and be trained and
mm-hmm.
have a trade and being able to actually provide for their families
mm-hmm.
with some good benefits and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just that the community needs to be able to not criticize, but to come together
mm-hmm.
and plan
mm-hmm.
and develop
mm-hmm.
Means of addressing
mm-hmm.
problems and
mm-hmm.
concerns and
mm-hmm.
issues that exist in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're saying, instead of accentuating the negative
mm-hmm.
things that you can identify,
mm-hmm.
begin to look more at the positive
mm-hmm.
things that and the benefits that can exist from
mm-hmm.
those things that exist in the community. Because
yeah.
there's nothing bad about diversity.
Right.
You
right.
know? I mean, that's a positive.
It's a good word.
It's a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting what you were saying before about perception and sort of perception around. Crime problems or situations,
mm-hmm.
issues in general. You had, I think I mentioned to you about the series of newspaper articles that had come out about, I think it was El Centro,
mm-hmm.
a meeting that had been held, and it was hard to read from the newspaper articles sort of what had really happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you could shed a little light from your perspective on, you know, what were the issues there? It sounds like it was maybe right during that time as the police department was building these trust
yeah.
in the community.
And I think there were a lot of issues,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of them had to do with perception.
Mm-hmm.
And the police department, again, within the walls of the police department, was actually developing plans and working
mm-hmm.
very, very diligently to address crime within the communities where you had a large population of Hispanics, investigate the crimes, identify suspects, or whatever it is. These actions were not being viewed from within the communities where you had the crime being occurred, have the crimes occurring. So, in essence, it was the perception that nothing was actually being done.
I see.
Again, being able to come to the table
mm-hmm.
to show basically what was being done, at the same time being able to draw from
mm-hmm.
the support organizations and the residents
mm-hmm.
from the community as far as ideas and things that we could do better and,
mm-hmm.
and how to forge partnerships and things, really what got the ball to rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, they began to look at, okay, yes, we now recognize you are doing some things.
Mm-hmm.
And now we recognize what your concerns are because we can understand why you would feel that way because you didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to come together to create this partnership, to share information, to work together hand in hand, it eliminates that not knowing, you know, what left hand not knowing what the right is doing,
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
During the time I was in community policing, I maintained on a daily basis articles.
Wow, that, look at that.
That came out.
No kidding.
Of
great.
The newspapers dealing with those particular issues.
Right, look at these. This looks like news article notebooks, July 1997 and August 1996 through June 30, 97. Wow.
And for 3 months I was at the FBI National Academy.
Huh, from, interesting.
From late September to the middle of December this year, last year. And I took a media course, and I did a case study.
Oh, wow, look at this. This is great.
And
the victimization of Durham's Hispanics.
Right.
Durham Hispanic case
Durham
study.
But this was, and I included a lot of the articles and different things that...
interesting.
But again, the magic behind bringing all of this together and making things happen was dialogue.
Yeah. So at that juncture, what you're saying is the dialogue hadn't yet started?
Had not started. And
And
I mean, Yvonne Parra
right.
from the Durham Hispanic
right.
Center. But basically... Hector Borges, the police officer that was placed on the task force to worked to in the community, but you know, these are some of the things that really allowed us an opportunity to understand better what we needed to do to better serve the community,
right.
And I mean we had meetings with the city manager, and I was looking for some of those articles here.
It sounded from one of the articles as though that was supposed to be a public meeting or something, and they weren't letting people in, or whether there was some question about whether this was a Latino only meeting.
One of the meetings, and again, misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Once we had an opportunity to come together and sit down and talk about that, that you know was settled. This was one of the meetings we had right here. The city manager met with different leaders from the Hispanic community.
October 25th, 1997, Harold Sun.
Yeah, and again, even this was October 97, where he,
also the Harold Sun.
What he basically talked about, you know, how good it is for the police department and the community and the city manager and government coming together, talking, for taking these steps and work with the community.
Right.
And again, this was what we had to do. We had to go back and do the same thing that we had done in Northeastern Durham.
Yeah.
Empower community, bring them together,
right.
began to, you know, to do some things to actually demonstrate that we are sincere, that we want to, you know, do a better job, and recognize and accept the fact that, first of all, we have not done the best job.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's human nature.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's just go ahead and cut to the chase. We have not done the very best job that we could have done. We've done what we thought we were supposed to be doing, but we really have not really done the things that we really needed to do.
Well, it sounded like you needed to educate yourselves, which is what you did.
Yeah, you do. And the only way, again, to do that is that is by coming together. And I mean, the more the two of us sit here and talk about different issues and life experiences and where we've been and how we got to where we are and our ideas, the more we're going to understand each other.
Right.
And again, and those three words are something I've used for years: communication, understanding, and trust.
Yeah.
And even during my criminal investigation days, I found even with a suspect, if you sit down and you talk to him long enough, he's going to understand you a little bit better. He's going to trust you a little bit better. And later on, you'll be able to get him where you want him to be. You just can't go in there and start popping questions. You got to get to know one another and get beyond a uniform or a badge or
right.
the color of your skin and different things like that to knowing that we may look different, but we have a lot of things in common. We feel that we want the same things. We want to be able to have a safe community.
Uh-huh.
We want to be able to provide for our families. You know, we want to be treated with respect.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and as you began to talk to people and understand people a little bit better, and as you began to make headway into doing things and fulfilling promises and goals and things,
right.
you know, people began to trust in you more and work with you a lot more. And these are the things that we've been able to do through Northeast Central Durham, and now we're doing again through Hispanic community.
Mm-hmm.
So next month, next year, if we have a different group that began, we got to realize automatically we got to go back and start to integrate and these and do start doing some of the same thing, with regardless of what group it is or you know. What part of town they're living in or whatever
right,
the case
right.
might be.
Exactly. That's part of living in a multicultural world.
It's part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, when you were talking about, let's see, going back to just a moment ago about, about sort of the efforts that you have made, you know, obviously educating yourselves to sort of what the issues are, what the concerns are from the Latino community. Where's the police department stand now in terms of, you know, numbers of Spanish-speaking officers or, you know, the types of services that you all are trying to provide?
Well, we basically have offered Spanish classes where we've actually had people come in and teach Spanish.
Right.
We have some officers that have voluntarily gone back to school on their own to learn Spanish. We're doing strong recruitment now to identify and hire Spanish-speaking officers. Right now, I really don't know how many Spanish-speaking officers we have now as opposed to back when we were doing this, which we only had about two. We lost one to a federal agency,
right.
which left Hector.
Right.
But I know we have another officer that actually has gone back and taken Spanish as a to get a B.S. degree.
Huh, interesting.
And he already has a B.S. degree, so he's going all the way back through, you know. One of the other things that we did when I was in community policing was to start a volunteer program where we have a list of Spanish-speaking citizens that agree to attend meetings, translate documents, do whatever we need to help you know, us to be able to better and more effectively communicate.
That's a great idea.
You know, and I started that when I was down in community policing, and a great aid, a real great aid to us, you know, as far as meeting again, continuing to do the recruitment and things. And I don't, like I said, I don't have the numbers
the stats to
say, you know, how many more we have now, but those are the efforts that have actually been continuous.
Right. And have you seen impact as a result of, you know, the kinds of changes that you all have made with reaching out to the Latino community and, you know, the, I guess, you know, the crime rate? It seems like we hear less about, you know, people being... You know,
well, I think it has had some impact. I mean, the education in itself, as far as how to be safer in the community and how to make yourself less of a potential victim of crime has helped a lot. And we've been able to do that through education and training and different programs and things like that. Also, through working with the banks and helping to establish, you know, accounts and getting, you know, ways that they could actually, you know, access the... you know, those institutions a lot more to keep all that money from out of the pockets and out of the homes. So, again, just being able, it's been, like I'm saying, you know, we've been educated. The Hispanic residents have been educated, and by doing that and coming together and working together, we've actually reduced the potential for crime. This last court case, I mean, can't help but have had an impact with the way that we, you know, rigorously prosecuted this case and the outcome of it. Mm-hmm. So it lets folk know too that this is not something that we're going to tolerate.
Yeah,
we're not. You know, we're certainly not going to turn our heads or sweep it under the rug.
Right. Do you want to elaborate just briefly on that case, just for the record here?
Certainly we were able to actually make several arrests on the home invasions, which also in many cases involved physical assault, sexual assaults. And other types of threats and intimidation. And these individuals were arrested. They were prosecuted. Through the course, there was no plea bargain with these particular cases, and ended with substantial prison terms, which means it would be a very long time before these individuals were able to come out and victimize anybody. And again, we wanted to send a clear message that we felt that these crimes were heinous. We felt that in many cases, you know, to put it lightly, they were hate crimes because people were identified because of their race to be victimized. And with the different things like that is that, you know, we will not allow folk to look at any resident within any community as anything other than a valued citizen or part of that community. And we felt, and I have said before with different interviews and talking, that I feel that the Latino community actually is a very positive addition to our community. I mean, bring a lot of positive things to the community. Again, they bring diversity, high work ethic, very, very strong family-oriented, you know, type of community. These are things that we need to help stabilize the community. You know, our quest is to go out and to integrate, you know, these communities and make them one instead of, in certain areas, building up walls to separate them.
Exactly.
I think we sent a clear message with what happened with this these last situations.
Maybe we could switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about unless there's more you want to add front, and maybe kind of switch gears a little bit to, you know, at least from what I understand from Jackie, you grew up and you're a longtime Durham resident.
Yes.
And it might be nice to talk a little bit about your, you know, what you have sort of experienced seeing the changes in Durham. Did you grow up in Northeast Central Durham?
No, I didn't grow up in Northeast Central Durham. I grew up, as a matter of fact, right close to downtown, which is on the outside of Northeast Central Durham, on the south side of the city. I grew up in an inner city community, very close, related to some of the neighborhoods that we're working in. As a matter of fact, the community I grew up, they call it the Bottom. It doesn't exist anymore. But dirt streets, duplex houses, what they call shotgun houses. You know, open the front door, you look straight through to the back door. And I lived in a little three-room duplex house in the Bottom, is where I grew up at. Like many during that time, it was multi-generational. You had, sometimes you actually had three generations in the same household. Very strong support. And one of the things that I say, you know, about our community is that we had a lot of the things that existed in Northeast Central Durham who went in, but we had stronger support mechanisms within the community. And sometimes it was not at the magnitude that it existed. You had teenage pregnancy and single parents, but you also had stronger support in the community that would actually bring them in and provide to them the education and support they needed to be and to raise children, a child or whatever. As far as the employment opportunity, there were more, so you know you had opportunities to do things. But again, you had more stability within the communities. And again, I look back as growing up, we didn't have a lot, mm-hmm. but we had the same thing everyone else had.
Right.
So you were poor,
right.
but you didn't know you
right.
were poor, kind
That's
of thing.
Right, exactly.
And yeah. and you know, and I laugh and now growing yeah. up because I can remember,
yeah.
I can remember crying as a small kid when one of my friends moved out of the community into
yeah.
public housing,
yeah.
And we went to visit.
Yeah.
And I saw that they didn't have to make fires anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, we were still yeah. burning coal and cutting wood and making
right,
fires and things
right.
like that with the big warm morning
right.
heater and things like that. And I cried because I wanted
yeah.
to move into public housing.
Right.
And because public housing was something that was really looked upon as being something nice.
Yeah.
And it just shows how perceptions change, you know,
right.
as time goes by, how positive that aspect of public housing, because it was a stepping stone. It got you from, the song Moving On Up.
Mm-hmm.
You were moving on up, you're moving out of the bottom into public mm-hmm. housing, and then the next step was public housing onto the next step. So I wanted to start moving it on up.
Uh-huh.
But,
yeah.
And, but again, it was just the way it was viewed
yeah.
From that perspective. But again, when we went into Northeast Central Durham, again, from standing on the outside looking in, you could see the same types of houses
yeah.
and the
yeah.
thing, but the people were different.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I think that's really what makes the difference.
Huh.
When when you go into these different communities, the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what we're showing now that
right.
with Northeast Central Durham, and people becoming more and more involved,
yeah.
That's what's happening. What's happening, and in my community again. A lot of things start to happen, urban renewal,
yeah,
right. and different things like that. So we were actually mm-hmm. pushed out of the community,
right.
which, you know, we had to. And my parents, I came from a home which had both parents in
right.
there. My father was a plasterer
uh-huh.
by trade,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And basically that's what he did. Sometimes doing when work was light, didn't have a lot of work in Durham. He didn't have to go work in Washington D.C., New York. Come home
right.
on weekends, wherever he could find
right.
the work. My mother, after I was born, went back to school to be a nurse.
Uh-huh.
And as a matter of fact, she's actually retired now, but she still
uh-huh.
does some nursing,
huh.
private duty
yeah.
nursing now.
Yeah.
So. And they worked very, very hard. I had cousins next door.
Mm-hmm.
I had an aunt across the street.
Yeah,
my grandmother lived one block down. So and even in between that, you had your extended family
mm-hmm.
because everybody kind of looked out for everybody
mm-hmm.
During those times. And that's another thing that you don't see. Even though the community looked the same, people didn't know each other
mm-hmm.
like they did when I mean, as a
mm-hmm.
kid, I could go
mm-hmm.
out in the community and run and play all day, all around
mm-hmm.
the next block and over.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents didn't worry about me because
mm-hmm.
they knew wherever
mm-hmm.
I was, I'd be taken care of. People had gotten
right.
more into themselves
right.
when we went into Northeast Central Durham. I mean,
mm-hmm.
these neighborhoods were nothing like they were when
yeah.
I was growing up.
So then in some ways with some of the housing developments, then kind of the fabric of the community would have been dislocated because you
Absolutely.
Wouldn't have the same configuration
right.
in those houses.
Right.
In this,
and
yeah.
they, you know, with the displacement and things
yeah.
starting to happen, people were going off in many different directions.
Yeah.
And again, like I'm saying, some of these communities had been sustained for decades,
mm-hmm.
you know, just by the different generations
right.
that grew up
right.
and lived in the communities.
Exactly.
And once that started to happen, I mean,
yeah.
you know, that was kind of like the beginning of the end
yeah.
for a lot of these communities with people
yeah.
being displaced.
And you would have been born in what year? So just to figure out.
53.
53.
Mm-hmm.
So then you would have been coming up. Like, didn't Few Gardens and a lot of those developments go in the late 50s?
In the late 50s. Few Gardens, I think, was the first
yeah.
public housing community that was built. And it was built, I think, sometime
yeah.
in the late
so,
50s.
So you really would have grown up
yeah.
with
And I can
that
remember
involved.
Going into Few Gardens at an early age because, as a matter of fact, there were a lot of whites
yeah.
that were in Few Gardens
mm-hmm.
initially. And until later, you know, it started to move a few black
mm-hmm.
families in there. But I can remember going to visit some relatives in Few Gardens, and I can remember how beautiful it was. I
wow.
mean, you know, and again, you know, just saying, man. And then in the community that I referred to was when I was growing up, and my friend moved to was MacDougall Terrace.
Yeah.
And I can remember going to visit. It was a family that was very close to my family, uh-huh. and on Dorothy Drive, I'll never forget, and they lived there for years, and but then they eventually moved out, you know. Uh-huh. But and to go in, and I mean, hardwood floors, and upstairs and downstairs, right. and different things like that. And here, you know, I'm looking at a 3-room house, and uh-huh. But again, as that began to continue to happen, and folk began to move on out of these communities, and again, the older people staying. The younger people, as they began to go into working and raising family, began to move out.
Right.
Then, again, the ones that started to come in later on were the ones that were really not attached to the community,
right.
that had no idea as far as the history and you know, of the community and things like that. So you lost a lot.
Right. Well, and a lot of people now call that sort of urban removal,
urban
renewal,
and that's exactly what it is.
You know, it just seems really ironic that the costs were so much higher than people anticipated. Yeah, and so growing up in that time period, then you would have seen a lot of changes, I would think, with schooling and you know.
Oh, certainly. You know, we had the neighborhood schools. Yeah. I mean, you walked to school, and there was a strong sense of community even in the schools. There was even a strong sense of partnership between the parents and teachers in the school. One of the things I can remember is how strong the PTAs were and the different things that we were involved in schools and things like that. But now, with, again, the way the schools are structured with busing and different things like that, you still don't have that identity. When your kid goes to school all the way across town and things that happen in and around the school pretty much does not really that impact your neighborhood that much. So there's been a lot of changes, and some, you know, I guess you can see good and bad
and
all. Sometimes as you begin to look at what the benefits are, you don't anticipate a lot of the negative things that go along with that.
Yeah, because people have talked a lot about how the loss of the black schools actually ended up really costing communities.
Yeah.
So would you have experienced some of the black schooling early on, black schools, before going into integrated schools?
My school was integrated my senior year in high school.
So you really did.
So I grew up
pretty
much in neighborhood schools, with predominantly black schools. And again, I graduated in 1971 from Hillside High School. And my graduating class was the first integrated class at Hillside.
Interesting.